We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Banduho. Big thanks to everyone who checked out our April slate. I thought it was a quality April. We did Everybody Wants Some, that's a Hall of Fame movie. Happy Gilmore, that's a Hall of Fame movie. McFarlane USA is a pretty quality movie. Like, I enjoyed it as a first-time watcher. And I hope our episode talking about the Tom Emanski commercials landed for those of you who watched a lot of SportsCenter in the 90s and watched a lot of baseball infomercials. If this is your first episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe. Get this wherever you get your podcast. New episodes come out every Monday, the occasional bonus episode on Thursday if I have nothing better to do. And if you're enjoying the pod, rate, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Those are, you know, the fucking best. You folks know the drill. And if you finish this episode and decide, holy shit, I want to hear some more of this podcast, we've got over 100 episodes talking about your favorite and least favorite sports movies. They're all almost completely evergreen. Check those out. Now, one of the past episodes on this podcast, way back in the day, like episode 4 or 5, I think, back when this podcast had a different name, back when I didn't take very good notes or know anything about editing whatsoever, one of the first things we covered was Friday Night Lights. It was something that I was so unhappy with my own performance in retrospect that it covered it again recently. But the guest I had on was a stud. He's a guy I love talking to. Joining me today to kind of try something new on this podcast is a guy that I've known for a long time. We used to freelance it back in the day with Postgrad Problems. He's now the co-host of Internet Party, a Washington Media podcast. It's John Duda. John, thanks so much for returning to Big Screen Sports.
Thank you for having me again. That was a hell of an intro.
It's easier than doing it in post, man.
I'm sorry to hear you didn't like our Friday Night Lights review.
Well, see, John, you were great, and I thought, like, you know, for an early episode, it wasn't bad, but, like, I go back and listen to my first 15 episodes of this podcast, and I just sound like I'm just stiff as a board, and I'm very scatterbrained. It was back before I took good notes, and, you know, I felt like I, you know, wanted to take, I had a guest reach out and ask about covering that movie. And I was like, you know what? I love Friday Night Lights. Let's talk about it again. But you were excellent on the episode. I'm thrilled to have you back on again. Before we get into today, a very new format for this episode, tell the folks about Internet Party, your Substack, promo everything.
Internet Party, we've been doing that for 3 years now, almost. Damn, that's a long time. Me and my friend Brad have been doing that for 3 years. Got picked up by Wash Media to operate under their umbrella. So that's been fun to just collab with them a little bit over the past few weeks. And I started doing a Substack just like once a week mostly. Sometimes I'll do like two a week. But one of my New Year's resolutions was to just pick up writing again. So that's just been a side project that I have a lot of fun with, and I definitely missed writing, but I'm very rusty from having taken 2 years off.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the content rug kind of got pulled out from under us back in the PGP days, I get asked often, like, so why'd you start this podcast, or where did Big Screen Sports come from? And it's like, well, I was doing this one thing, you know, two or three times a week writing for this site, and then that site cratered, so I needed something else to do.
Yeah, it's a nice little creative outlet, and also just like get out and do something other than your actual job.
That's the big thing, is like, that's 100% it, like something that's not my job, which is why we have Big Screen Sports. But something else that you and I both do is you are one of the few other people I know who use an app called Letterboxd.
Yep.
I am a recent Letterboxd convert, I guess a couple months ago, maybe like 6 months ago. And for those of you who don't know, Letterboxd is, this is kind of hard. It's like a social media app for people who like movies, in the sense of it is a good way to categorize and catalog the movies that you watch. You rate them. You can review them. John does a lot of reviews on his. You actually write reviews. I'm very impressed.
So
but
that is, Kyle, that is the point of Letterboxd, is to write reviews. You got to start doing that, buddy.
See, I think about it, but I'm like, it's just easier to like, I'm going to let the stars speak for themselves. I'm going to do my rating. I'm going to keep track of what I watched. And then every now and then, like, I think I have like a couple reviews. Like your list is extensive. You have like 8 pages of reviews.
I will say the app as a whole is extremely pretentious. There's a lot of like fake cinephiles and you know, wannabe movie critics on the app.
I was gonna ask you, is this the lamest social media app out there?
It's so lame. It's beyond lame.
I hate how much I love it.
But I've always loved movies. Like, watching movies has always been a passion of mine. I know that sounds stupid, but this is the app for me. Like, they designed this for me. And if you don't try too hard at it, it can be a lot of fun. And I try to have fun with my reviews.
Yeah, I enjoy your reviews. I picked out two of the ones I really liked. Your review of The Revenant, which I picked two ones that I just fully agree with. Your review of The Revenant is beautifully shot movie, but in the end, I found everything else about it to be extremely okay. The Academy absolutely threw Leo a pity Oscar for this one, which, like, it's a shame that he didn't win for Django or something else, so he didn't have to do The Revenant.
They should have gave it to him for Titanic.
Or like Wolf of Wall Street.
What was he, 18 for Titanic?
He was right around that, maybe 20.
Everyone says that, like, that's not an original thought for me to say that they gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award or a pity Oscar. Like, that, everyone thinks that about that movie. It's just very slow.
It's not a movie I'm ever gonna, I don't think I'll ever rewatch The Revenant.
I totally agree. But it's also, who's the director?
He did Iñárritu. He did Birdman, which I like Birdman a lot.
Birdman was great. A lot of those like sort of long tracking shots, it kind of reminded me of like Tree of Life.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, the Brad Pitt. That's a lot of Terrence Malick.
Yeah, but it's just like a lot of shots of you know, nature and very artistically done.
It's I can see where, like, it's the movie was so Oscar baited.
You see, I just did the pretentious Letterboxd thing. Yeah, and I don't even know.
This is the stuff you run into on Letterboxd.
I don't even know why I said tracking shot, because a tracking shot is like what you see in Goodfellas when they're walking in the restaurant.
The Copacabana scene, yeah.
Yes, that scene. That's a tracking shot. What I'm talking about is a pan where the camera, like, goes over, it covers like the expanse of the sky that Leo is looking up at in the Revenant.
Yeah, it's the thing about Letterboxd, though, and the reason why I catalog all the movies I've watched on this podcast. There's a list on there, folks, Big Screen Sports. You can go check it out. Every movie on this podcast, I've given a star rating. I've reviewed very few of them. But I also like I don't follow many people on Letterboxd because one, I don't know many people who use it. And two, like I basically follow a couple people whose opinions that I really respect. And it's very good. For me, I found it's a better way of having an idea if I'd like something than like Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, so the other review of yours that I'm a big fan of is short, sweet, it perfectly describes the movie. It's your Once Upon a Time in Hollywood review, where you just have the best quote from the movie, another Leo movie, 8 goddamn whiskey sours. You couldn't stop at 3 or 4, you drunk bastard. And then you finish with, this one gets better every time you watch it. I'll never tire of it. I couldn't agree more. It's a perfect movie.
Yep. I probably watched that over 5 times this summer. It gets better
really,
every
really
time.
Good.
It really does get better every time you watch it. Anyone that says that movie is slow is a fool.
If they would have given Leo an Oscar earlier, we wouldn't have had to deal with, like, we could have gotten more movies like this. He wouldn't have had to do a movie like The Revenant. Like, think about what the time he spent doing The Revenant. Like, think about what that could have been.
Was he doing that for several years?
I think it was a long shoot, but you just think about like time commitment in general. Like he signed on to do the movie, did the shoot. I think it was a very difficult shoot from what I remember reading about it. Like it's very, the director is very demanding, but like think if that energy that he has in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Wolf of Wall Street was used on a project similar to those instead of like, I got to do The Revenant because I need to pick up this Oscar before it starts becoming a thing.
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street is kind of soured for me. Like, when that movie came out towards the tail end of college for me, I couldn't get enough of it, and I think I wore it out. And I was also just aspiring to be, like, some version of that, and of course that never happened.
Yeah, I think every guy of that age is like, You idolize Jordan Belfort. You don't like realize how much of a piece of shit he is. Like you think he's like a funny piece of shit. And then you're like, oh no, he's just, you get older and you're like, no, this is a guy I actually don't want to be whatsoever.
Yeah. He's just a drug addict.
Never be that guy. Yeah. Straight up.
But I was hoping you would roast some of my reviews here. Like not all of these you could have agreed with, surely.
Well, so here's what, I guess we should get to the actual premise of the episode. So what I reached out to John about was like, you know, we both use Letterboxd. He's one of the only people I know personally who uses Letterboxd. Like, it's like him, my wife. I'm not gonna roast my wife's reviews on a podcast. That'd be a tough look. But I wanted to take basically our ratings or how we thought of movies and kind of like question each other a little bit, have a healthy debate. We both rated a lot of movies on Letterboxd. Like I didn't want to roast a lot of your reviews and the writing you did because you actually you actually like did the writing. Like I don't have much for you to go off. Like I just have ratings. You're using Letterboxd properly. I will say you also have, I think the funniest review you have is your review for Let Them All Talk, which I have not seen. Isn't that the Soderbergh one with Meryl Streep? And
yes, it's okay.
I haven't seen it, but your review is Lucas Hedges, Retire Bitch, which made me laugh.
I don't like Lucas Hedges.
Really?
Every single movie he's in gets like critically acclaimed and nominated for an Oscar. It's insane. Like, do a flop.
The
do
stuff
one
you
bad
reviewed,
movie for me.
The stuff you reviewed, most of the stuff you review, I actually like agree with. Like, so one of your, I guess, hotter takes in thinking about how a movie is thought of is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which you gave 1 star in the first line of your review is, holy shit, this is the most boring movie ever made. I wish I was the type of person kind of to be like, wow, you didn't appreciate Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Like, what is wrong with you? You're so wrong. But like, no, I was the same way. I was pretty bored with it, honestly.
That movie, I've tweeted about it so much too, and it's crazy how many times I had to watch it to actually get through it. I fall asleep every single time.
The only thing that you've actually written a review of that you didn't like, that I consider like 3 stars, like the bell curve of something I enjoy. Like I might rewatch again, or I at least enjoyed it. Anything lower, I'm like, this is a movie I don't want to see again, or this movie, you know, this movie stinks. So you gave 2 stars to Tenet. I gave 4 stars to Tenet. Oh, but I can also totally see why someone would give 2 stars to Tenet. Because, like, I'll be the first one, I don't understand Tenet at all. I just, I kind of came to an understanding with myself. I think, like, you know, like 5-10 minutes in, it was like, okay, I'm not going to get this. I'm not going to try. I'm just going to kind of enjoy it. And that's how I went into that.
That movie was such a drag for me. I think Nolan purposely did all of that stuff to just piss people off. And I'm going to continue going to see Christopher Nolan movies as soon as humanly possible, because I love him. But this one was just off the rails. I also saw it in one of those theaters where the seats will move. They're like motion activated. So like during an action scene, they'll jerk you back and forth, or like you'll kind of get punched in the back of the recliner when somebody gets punched, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got like water coming out of the seats and shit. I was like violently hungover when I went to see Tenet, and that was just not what I needed. So that probably played a role in my review.
Yeah, see, I saw it when it went on VOD. I saw it at my house, and I was able to see it with closed captions, which I think is huge, because one of the big complaints I heard about from people who saw it in theaters was that it's very, like, you can't understand anything. And, like, I think about, like, Inception and Interstellar and Dunkirk are three of my favorite movie theater experiences ever, those Nolan movies, but I also... I feel like Tenet, because of the closed caption aspect and how confusing it already was, I think I would like to see it in a theater now, but I'm glad the first time I saw it, I had closed captions on.
Yep. And to your point about the like 3-star below threshold, I think I need to be a little more critical of movies that I'm watching, because I feel like my default right now is 4 stars.
I mean, if you feel like you need to be more critical, then I need to be way more critical, because I'm very liberal with the stars.
Well, the other thing is, like, I have a couple friends on here who are big on the app, who are big into movies, like foreign movies and just shit that I've never heard of. So I will take recs from them. And when I do that, I'm going into the movie, you know, pretty much expecting it to be okay, at least okay, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's hard, if you even got some bit of enjoyment in something, it's hard to like pan the shit out of it, you know?
I also hate when people refer to movies as films. I know that's
I do that in the tweets of this podcast all the time, but not in real life speak.
Like, I can't, that's what I mean. I can't seriously talk to somebody about a movie and call it a film. It just, it's too much.
Yeah, it's a movie when you're talking to someone. It's a film when you're writing about it.
Only if you went to film school.
Well, so what we're going to do, I think with this format of this episode, we're just gonna ask questions. We're gonna mainly the question of why. Just taking exceptions with some others' ratings, with each other's ratings, or maybe a review if you picked out something. Before we do that, I went to look. You have not rated a sports movie on Letterboxd. So I'm gonna put you on the spot. We covered Friday Night Lights. What are you giving Friday Night Lights?
I would give that 4 stars.
It's very good. I gave it 4.5. I think it's probably my favorite football movie, especially after rewatching it.
Yeah, I would say that's right up there with one of my favorite sports movies ever. And I told you this on our first pod together. I think that movie is better than the show.
See, I can't chime in because the show Friday Night Lights is a big pop culture black hole for me. I've never started it. It's like this daunting thing that's hanging over my shoulder. It kind of taps me on the shoulder every now and then. It's like, hey, you haven't watched me yet.
It's just,
talk about me all the time.
The movie is so much grittier than the show. There's no Booby Miles in the show. There's no Mike Winchell in the show. There's no Billingsley even. It like, the characters I get are loosely based in the television show off the ones that H.G. Bissinger wrote about. But for me, the movie just rung a lot more true. And that also might be because I have a bias that was, like, growing up in high school, like, I read that book and just I was head over heels in love with it. And then the movie came out and I was like, yes, this is incredible. But they did take a few exceptions with the movie that I didn't love, namely taking them all the way to the state championship.
Yeah, it's I kind of at first I didn't like that aspect. And then I came to the rationale of, if they made the last game the state semifinal or whenever they, I think it was either the state semifinal, or the state regional final, wherever they lost, if they made that the big game, you would know they lose in the end. Versus if you didn't read the book, you're not exactly 100% sure they're going to lose in, you know, in that final game. But no, it's very good. John, let's take a quick ad break and then let's spar on some letterbox ratings.
Let's do it.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. So we're back. Want to get into, I guess how we kind of kick this around. This might be a little rough off the edge. This is a format I've never done on this show. Is I just suggested to John that he take a few ratings or reviews of mine that he takes exception with or has some questions about, and I do the same for him. And we just ask each other why. What's the deal? John, you are the guest. I will give you the option. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
You know what? You've been peppering me with some questions, so I'll give you one.
Okay.
And you know, again, I have to say before we begin, if you like to truly use this app, you got to start reviewing.
I know. I will make a promise to you that I will start writing more reviews on Letterboxd.
Okay. Thank you. I
even if they're just
it.
A couple sentences.
That's all you need, man. I think I know I would appreciate it.
Deal. I will whatever I watch next, which I think if you're a listener to this podcast is going to be 61, so tune into that. I will
Barry Pepper?
Yes, that is Barry Pepper and Thomas Jane. That's a movie I'm a huge fan of, actually.
I haven't seen that since I was like 10, but
I think you would really like it upon rewatch.
I'll be interested to see your review, see if it holds up. All right, Kyle. Well, I'm a big P.T. Anderson guy, and
okay.
You gave The Master 3 stars. In my opinion, that's a 5-star movie.
Dude, so The Master is something that I circled the wagons on for a long time. I was like, God, I need to see The Master. It's like, it's kind of like the show Friday Nights. It's just this big pop culture black hole. Like, There Will Be Blood, incredible movie. Boogie Nights, incredible movie. Heart 8, incredible movie. Like, I just didn't, like, and I went into The Master with just sky high expectations. And like, the Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman performances are incredible. They're both really good. But I finished that movie and I don't know. I feel like I was like, compared to how I felt when I was done watching There Will Be Blood, it just wasn't comparable to me.
All right. But for comparison's sake, you gave Rundown starring Sean William Scott and The Rock 3.5 stars. So how do you parse that?
That's tough to justify. Oh man, you really backed me into a corner there. So that's actually one that rewatched for this pod. You know how we're children of a certain age to where you remember going to sleep at night with a DVD on and waking up with the menu music blaring at like 3 o'clock
that
in the morning.
That was a random Seinfeld disc for me.
Yeah. For me, it was The Rundown. I watch The Rundown all the time. And like in retrospect, is The Rundown a better movie than The Master? No. You know, mistakes were made. I think part of the great thing about this episode is maybe we can reevaluate some faults.
Well, listen, nostalgia plays a factor in everything. And another, going off of your DVD menus, I would say the greatest DVD menu I've ever encountered is the one for Snow Dogs, starring Cuba Gooding Jr.
Oh, what is Paul Walker was in one. I think it was Eight Below, RIP. I can say I've not seen Snow Dogs.
Snow Dogs is not a good movie, but for whatever reason, we owned it at my house. I think it was in one of those like bins at a rental video place. But they had a really fun like interactive menu with games that you could play.
So that's next level.
Yeah, so like in my mom's car in the van, sorry, not a car. In my mom's van, we had a TV in the back, and we could play the shitty like interactive games when we were going somewhere if we got really bored.
Yeah, I mean that's fire. That's a nice touch. Shout out, Jenna and then, Hickey. That's a nice touch.
Exactly. I love those TikToks.
I'm a huge fan of JR's. To everyone, go follow That's a Nice Touch on TikTok or Instagram. I think he's on Instagram too.
Yeah, toss that a follow. And then also, if you're into interactive DVD menu games, Harry Potter, every Harry Potter movie has a really good, expansive game list on their DVDs.
That is huge. That's good to know. I have the Sorcerer's Stone DVD around somewhere. It might be at my parents' house, but
yeah. And all you need is the DVD clicker to play.
Man, what a time. What a time to be alive. DVD menus.
Are you a clicker or a remote?
I am remote. I have always been a remote guy.
A real traditionalist.
Yeah. I'm very pretentious when it comes to I feel like clicker might be the pretentious. Is clicker the pretentious thing?
How is clicker pretentious?
I don't know, but it's remote is standard. So what's the would be the pretentious
remote
way to...
is I would say clicker is like the most casual. Remote is just a little too buttoned up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just always been the remote for me.
I think there's really only two names. It's remote or clicker, right?
Yeah. Or pass me that thing. If you're at your grandpa's house.
Well, that just sounds dirty, Kyle.
That does, yeah. Okay, so...
Pass me that thing.
Pass me that thing. I mean, you sound just like my Kentucky-born grandfather.
Them thangs be thanging.
All right, so, John, this is what I've got for you.
Okay.
And so this is a movie that I have actually rated 5 stars, and you rated 2 stars.
Okay, this will be good.
This is Into the Spider-Verse, the animated Spider-Man movie.
There's no way I rated that.
You rated that 2 stars.
I rated it 2 stars, but I didn't review it. Is that what you're saying?
You did not review it. No, you rated it 2 stars. And John, I'm here to tell you that is that is probably the best Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 2. And I will say with the caveat that I have not dialed into the Tom Holland movies very much.
Well, Kyle, here's the problem with your premise. You forgot to factor in that I am a Tobey Maguire diehard. So
you did this for Tobey?
Yes, this was all for Tobey.
I see, the thing is, like, you're standing here for Tobey, and I don't know, what has Tobey done for you lately?
He doesn't need to do anything. Tobey Maguire, they had songs from Nickelback and Creed as their main like end of movie songs. How do you not just like love that?
I'm not loving this movie. Loving Into the Spider-Verse for me is not mutually exclusive with Spider-Man 2. Spider-Man 2 is beautiful. Spider-Man 3 is really bad. I think people need to remember that. But Spider-Man 2 is an excellent movie. I think at the time it was probably the best superhero movie ever.
Spider-Man 2 is the one with the octopus.
Yes, Doc Ock. That movie is fine. Okay.
Well, I wouldn't even go so far as to say it's fire. Like, Spider-Man 1 was phenomenal.
One of the first movies I remember seeing in theaters. Like, I actually have a vivid memory of who I saw it with, where I saw it, etc.
And they say that a hero can save us.
Shout out Nickelback.
Yeah.
Somehow Nickelback has Willem lasted Dafoe. A little longer than Tobey Maguire.
Well, they're around as a punchline, I think, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I would take that kind of relevancy. If this pod just turned into like a walking meme, I would take it.
I didn't mean to like disparage the Spider-Verse, because I think in terms of like representation, it's very important what they're doing with Miles Morales. And so the rating was more so me just standing up for the original Tobey Maguire movies.
All right. So, John, the next thing I want to bring up for you is a movie that I rated 4 stars. You rated 2 stars.
Hold on, Kyle.
Okay.
We got to go back to Spider-Man real quick.
Okay. Let's go back to Spider-Man.
So, what I was saying before we got cut off was I totally understand Miles Morales is an important, evolution of the character. I was more so just, I have to hold Tobey Maguire down. I have to just let people know that he bridged this. He built the bridge.
Just riding for your man, Tobes.
Yeah, and then Andrew Garfield, like, what an afterthought.
I was so out on those movies that
I've never seen a single one of them.
I watched the first one. I thought it was really, really bad. I did not watch the second one.
What has he done other than The Social Network?
So he did, he did Heartbreak Ridge.
Hacksaw
Ridge. And then he did that Martin Scorsese movie that's real long.
I've always wanted to watch that. And I haven't,
but I heard he got like really into that.
Is it, it's not Purity. It's something like that, though. It's about two priests on a mission in somewhere in Asia.
I thought it was Brazil. I don't know. I've always really liked Silence. Yeah, I've always really liked Andrew Garfield. But yeah, it's been a hot
minute.
Don't
you love when you're on a podcast and the two people or three people or whatever it is, they're talking and they can't figure out the name of something.
And you can hear everyone like silently Googling in the background, like trying to figure out what it is.
That
what a beautiful medium podcasting is.
It's just so funny to me. I love that about podcasting, because it happens almost every episode, in my case at least.
No, same, especially like with this talking movie. So, John, I want to get into the second movie I have.
Right.
So I gave this 4 stars. You gave it 2 stars. A little movie called Jojo Rabbit.
Oh, God.
I love Jojo Rabbit.
And Taika Waititi, I know this was critically acclaimed. I just couldn't get into it for what, like, I watched, Where the Wild Things Are? No, not that movie, but it's like that movie about the kid, the troublemaker in New Zealand that goes to live with the old people.
We're doing that thing again.
Yeah, we are. It's, Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah, see, that one is off my radar. I have not seen that. The other Taika Waititi movie that stands out to me is Thor Ragnarok, which, like, I'm not super into Marvel, but I love that movie.
Yeah, so I'm not either. But the thing with Jojo Rabbit was I just couldn't get into like the camp aspect and like satirizing Hitler.
I think that was the big hang up that a lot of the dissenters of Jojo Rabbit, I think that was the big hang up they had, was getting over that aspect. So I can respect that at least. I've really, really enjoyed it.
I also am notorious for just watching like really, depressing movies. So if we're watching something about a awful human being like that, I prefer them to be really, really sad.
I will say I picked up from your letterbox. You skew much higher on movies that make you sad.
Well, I like dramas, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like if I'm going to take the time to watch like something that is really critically acclaimed and has been reviewed highly and that I've never, like, I want to make sure it's worth my time. And usually it just so happens that most of those movies are a little slow and almost always kind of depressing.
Yeah. See, you and my wife are kind of the opposite because, like, while my, so for instance, we watched Chinatown recently, which is a okay. wonderful movie, but a depressing ending, like the,
yeah.
not to spoil, you know, nearly 50-year-old Chinatown, but you don't feel, you don't feel really good at the end of that movie. Like, that can ruin a movie for her, which, like, I respect, but, like, because you don't, you know, you watch the end of Chinatown, and you're like, oh my God. And yeah, it's tough, but, like, it's an excellent movie. So you're kind of on that, though, that where that doesn't ruin the movie for you. It just kind of, you kind of just eat that shit up.
100%. Yes.
I respect it. I really respect that.
That's actually the only Roman Polanski movie I've seen, I think, is Chinatown.
I've seen the Pianist, which is very, it's probably, it's, yeah, I mean, it's more depressing than Chinatown.
That's Adrian Brody's, like, breakout movie, isn't
yeah,
it?
He won his Oscar for that. That's a movie, that's one that I thought was really good, and I'll never, ever watch it again.
Yeah, I might have to check that out, actually.
But I would, knowing what you like, yeah, I think you probably should.
So, I'm going to bring up, forgive me for bringing this one up, because it's like one of your more recent reviews.
Okay.
I swear it's not a cop-out, though, because I've been watching a lot of F1 Drive to Survive lately.
Yes.
I just finished season 2, like, today. Is your 5-star review for Senna, and that one is flame.
Really?
I loved it. I loved Senna.
I thought you were saying that's something you disagree with. No. Senna
Like fire. I like, so good.
Yeah, Senna is, I really think it's the best sports documentary I've ever seen. Have you also seen Maradona, the other sports documentary he did?
I have seen that. That's pretty depressing, you know, just the addiction aspect of Maradona's life. But really, you think Senna is the best sports doc ever?
It's, for me, it's certainly, I will say it's easily Mount Rushmore for me, I think. Okay.
Yeah, I got to go with OJ.
Oh, I mean, that's like, that's almost like a different level, though. Because, I mean, that's long enough to be its own Mount Rushmore.
It that is the greatest sports doc I've ever seen, I think. It's so damn good.
That and, like, The Last Dance are kind of, they're, like, their own kind of thing. Like, this extended series.
I put an asterisk next to The Last Dance because Jordan had final, like, cutting power over what got in and what didn't.
Well, that's like a lot of those sports docs. Like, you notice, like, you watch, like, I really like the Fab Five one, but it's very obvious that Jalen Rose was was spearheading that thing.
An executive producer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. All right. Well, let's go with, I'm scrolling right now. I mean, you're kind of the same way as me, Kyle. Like,
yeah, I actually struggle doing this exercise a lot more. I thought we'd be able to bicker more, and there's not a whole lot there.
No, I love that you love that thing you do.
I don't think
we've talked about this, but that's one of my favorite movies ever, and it's kind of sad at the end that they break up, but it's also like Tom Hanks in a semi-evil role.
I watched the scene where they first hear their song on the radio. I watch that on YouTube at least once a month. I might do that when we're done recording the podcast. It's one of the happiest scenes ever. Like, if I just need to feel happy, I'll watch that.
I love Liv Tyler.
She's great. She's great. It's probably my favorite Liv Tyler, better than Lord of the Rings.
I'm seeing Days of Thunder. I know we were just talking about like racing, but I might have to, I've never seen that movie. I might have to check that out.
So I watched it. I was a first time watcher for the pod and I don't have a good NASCAR background. My guest was Ryan McGee from ESPN, who was fucking awesome. I highly encourage anyone who's seen that movie, go check out that episode. What's cool about that movie is the racing action is awesome and it's very seated in like NASCAR lore. Like they just took a ton of NASCAR legend and hearsay and true fact and kind of turned it all into this like very cocaine fueled movie, because everyone making the movie, like the producers behind it, was like Bruckheimer and his partner that were just coked out of their minds.
Bruckheimer loves a slow-mo action scene.
Yeah, you would actually probably really appreciate Days of Thunder. John, I have a movie I need to ask you. I'm just surprised that you don't like it more.
Okay.
Knives Out. I feel like the aesthetic of Knives Out.
Man, I did love the aesthetic. I loved the sweater that What's-His-Face was wearing. The cable knit sweater.
The Chris Evans. So that's actually, as soon as I saw that you only gave Knives Out 3 stars, I was like, but the Chris Evans sweater, I figured that was good for at least 4.
Yeah. I'll give the sweater 4, but I'm sticking with the 3-star rating. I just like I didn't love Bond's what's the actor's name?
Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc. That's my favorite part of the movie.
Dude, I hated that accent. It just didn't sound natural.
So
I know he's English.
Have you seen Logan Lucky?
I've seen Logan Lucky.
I feel like no one is having more fun acting in a movie than Daniel Craig and Knives Out and Logan Lucky.
I'm also a Soderbergh stan. Like anything that he makes, I'm watching it immediately. Like Contagion was so genius and ahead of its time.
Yeah, I mean, clearly.
But for Knives Out, I don't know. Maybe I don't like whodunits. I just thought the payoff at the end was not all that satisfying for it to just be, an accident like that. I was hoping for something more sinister.
I will agree with that. I don't want to say I was let down, but yeah, I was hoping for something.
But it's never.
A little more. I was also just hoping for it. I don't know what the condition on spoiler alerting a movie that came out like 2 years ago is, but like
you don't have to spoiler alert that.
Yeah, I was honestly just hoping it wasn't the person it was, just because I was such a fan of that person.
Well, and then the other thing was they turned the audience so far against Chris Evans that immediately I was like, well, there's no way he did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a. I don't know. I really enjoyed
Knives Out. It was a fun movie though. And 3-star rating is not a bad rating, as we've discussed.
It's quality. It's just I'm just surprised that you weren't more in on it. But I want to appreciate 2 of your ratings, because I don't want to say I judge people based on how they feel about these movies, but like I will say I think less of people who don't love these movies is you gave 5 stars to Drive and Ex Machina.
I feel like those 2 movies came out in the same year, and like any fan of movies, like I don't know, like that's kind of when I started really getting into movies, was when those 2 came out.
Drive is a movie that after I watch it, I listen to the soundtrack for the next week.
Oh yeah, 100%. The Scorpion coat probably hasn't aged well.
I could see you pulling a Scorpion coat off. No. Like if you wanted to just get a random fit off, but like wear it with like high socks and Birkenstocks or something.
I appreciate that, but absolutely not. And then Ex Machina, Oscar Isaac, the beginning of like his superstardom, right before he did what's the movie he did with the redhead? A Most Violent Year.
Yeah, which I noticed he also, like, I think Inside Llewyn Davis was when he really took off. But, I mean, he's also in Drive. Drive was the first time I'd seen Oscar Isaac, and Ex Machina was the second time I'd seen Oscar Isaac.
So, you're right. I forgot he is the ex-con in Drive.
He is.
He's in there. He's in there for about 5 minutes.
Makes the ill-fated pawn shop robbery.
The best scene. I was just talking about this last Saturday. The best scene in Ex Machina is when he's dancing to that disco song with the robot.
Yeah.
That's a YouTube clip that I'll just put on when I'm feeling awful.
Oh, if that's on YouTube, I'm going to throw it in this episode right now.
I told you, you're wasting your time talking to her. However, you would not be wasting your time if you were dancing with her. Go ahead, dance with her. Dance with her. No? You don't like dancing? She does. Come on, buddy. After a long day of Turing tests, you gotta unwind.
What were you doing with Ava?
What?
You tore up her picture.
I'm gonna tear up the fucking dance floor, dude. Check it out.
Oh, it's so good. And if we're, you know, sucking each other's dicks over movie reviews, I've got to give you one for Michael Clayton.
Oh, I love Michael Clayton. God, so good.
It's such a dude's rock movie.
It's one that I don't want to say it's like underrated. I just feel like it's not talked about enough. And when I say that, I'm like, when would you talk about Michael Clayton in casual conversation? Like, not at hipster coffee shops talking about Michael Clayton, but it's just very, very good.
It'd be really tough to wedge Clayton into a conversation at like a party.
Yeah. There's not much that happens in that movie. That's relatable. It's not. Yeah. If you're at a party, it's not like you see something and you're like, oh, that reminds me of, of the part in Michael Clayton when his car blows up.
Yeah. It's a really good movie. I think that was Clooney's first, or it might have been his second, because he did Good Night and Good Luck as well. Highly recommend that if you haven't seen it.
But big Michael Clayton guy. I have a question about you gave me a kind of a hype, not a hypothetical, but like a you know, you told me I rated The Rundown 3.5 stars, but only gave The Master 3 stars.
Okay.
So these are movies that are very closely related. You gave Inception 3 stars, but Interstellar 4 stars. I'm very interested by that.
All right. Well, now we're just nitpicking, Kyle.
I am nitpicking, but I always look at it. For me, Inception is clear. I clearly prefer one over the other.
I guess I just prefer to get confused in space rather than getting confused in different dimensions or dreamscapes.
That's fair. I Inception to me also, like, probably my favorite movie theater experience of all time. Just those Hans Zimmer scores just hit different in a movie theater.
Is he your favorite composer?
I mean, so a big caveat, and I don't have like a list of 20 that I'm like, oh, but this person.
Sure.
Of the people I know, like, I will say the Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross, I don't think they've ever, like, they've just taken over the last decade. Like, Social Network on, everything they've done has been good. They're nominated for 2 Oscars this year.
Yeah. I mean,
or not 2 Oscars, but they're nominated for 2 movies in the same category.
Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails really just found like a second career in movie scoring.
I mean, and it's stunning how good he is at it. And like, it's not like his scores don't sit on the sidelines either. Like, you think about the Social Network, like how much the score paces that movie, how good it is. Like, it's fucking wild.
Yeah. I was so disappointed in Fincher for throwing out Mank, and I know he's probably going to win a million awards for it, but
Mank has actually not getting a lot of the
nominations.
No, it's getting the nominations. It's not getting the he hasn't been winning a lot for it. Like, it looks like it might get shut out.
I didn't even finish it.
See, I did. I thought the second half of Mank was a lot better than the first half of Mank.
But I also haven't finished Citizen Kane.
See, I watched Citizen Kane in college, and I definitely didn't appreciate it in that regard, but I'm not 100% sure I would love it now.
Yeah, it's so old, you know?
John, can we just run through real quick the movies that he has scored since The Social Network that he has been the composer on?
Sure. I've got a guess. He's done every Fincher movie since then.
I believe so, because he's done Dragon. He did Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and then he did Gone Girl.
Okay.
And then this one is kind of random. He did Patriots Day, which is the Mark Wahlberg way too soon Boston bombing movie, which is...
You know what? I actually watched that one. Not that bad.
That's how I feel also about Deepwater Horizon, the way too soon oil rig explosion movie, which I am ashamed. I've watched it like three times.
When you just need a mindless like action movie, Mark Wahlberg will get you there.
I just got to see him escaping from that flaming oil rig. Let's do it.
Oh, man. He did Soul?
So he's nominated this year for Soul and Mank. And then he also did 9 episodes of Watchmen. I think that's the entire. Did you watch the TV show Watchmen?
I did. Yeah, I loved it.
I loved it. Loved it. Oh, he did mid-90s. I don't know if you've seen mid-90s, but I love mid-90s.
I've also seen that. Another one that Lucas Hedges was in.
Yes, and he's got some.
He's a prick.
Dude, Trent Reznor did Ken Burns' The Vietnam War.
Oh,
man,
yeah.
What a savant. Like, he is in on everything.
I wish you could rate... I don't know if you can rate Ken Burns films on Letterboxd, but if you can...
I'm going to say I bet you can, because I feel like you can rate almost everything on Letterboxd.
If you haven't seen the Hemingway one, just get it.
That's just
dropped,
right?
Drop what you're doing. Yeah, it did. And it's free. It's free to watch.
Yeah, I will let you know you can rate all of Ken Burns' stuff. So I'll be, when we're done with this, I'll be going to get Baseball, The Civil War.
Baseball, I've tried buying Baseball online. It's like $500.
My dad has that recorded on VHS. You remember how he used to have to
even better.
Like, record VHS? Yeah, he's got that. So we've got that kind of action.
That's if you have a working VHS player... Absolutely.
Man, Ken Burns, what a special.
Could you still buy a VHS player like new on Amazon, do you think?
I know you can get them on eBay, cuz I have a 7-year-old, as most listeners of this podcast know, and when before Disney Plus, like we have, you know, at my parents' house, you have like the classic, everyone's got the old big box of all the Disney movies, you know, on VHS.
Yeah, of course. With the weirdly like padded VHS case.
Yes, yeah, the one that you know, like the size of a large book.
Yeah, they. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, no, the go-tos were just like the thin cardboard ones that you get when you bought a VHS used from Blockbuster. That was absolutely the move. But I was trying to buy, I was looking for a VHS because I want to re-experience all these movies with my kid, and all the, I was trying to find like the last vestige of the dual VHS DVD TVs, you know, it was before flat screens, obviously, but it was, or like, you know, thin, it was before thin TVs, but it was like, still a quality TV, but it had a dual VHS DVD player, and I couldn't really find one, but someone in my neighborhood was selling a massive box TV with a VHS player in it, and I was like, okay, let's take this. And like the quality was super shitty, but got to re-experience those Disney movies. But then Disney Plus came out and just changed the game. Parents don't need VHS player anymore.
Yeah, but the thing about streaming is you never own it, you know?
Yeah. That is the tough part. I mean, you can buy movies off Amazon, but I will say I miss, and my wife will kill me if she listens to this, because I had to put up a fight to keep all my DVDs when we moved, and we have two boxes that haven't been unpacked yet, and it is my two boxes of DVDs.
Are you a like Criterion Channel person?
So I have not dove into the Criterion Channel. I feel like that's like that's like final boss level of Letterboxd.
You're absolutely right. And it's also like peak pretension.
Yeah, I listen. One of my favorite podcasts, The Big Picture, brought to you by The Ringer. They always talk about the Criterion Collection. I'm like, I'm not sure I'm there yet.
Well, it's like, are you into like Bong Joon-ho?
I do like Bong Joon-ho, yeah. Like, I liked Parasite, that's I like Snowpiercer.
That's not the only person that they'll put on there, but like, they'll put on a lot of obscure, quote-unquote films, classics, that aren't necessarily in the English language.
See, I'm just not sure I'm there yet.
You're not getting into foreign film yet.
I'm not into foreign film. I guess Parasite is the, but Parasite was huge over here. I'm trying to think of straight up foreign films, like all subtitles besides Parasite that I have watched any bit recently and loved. And nothing is coming to mind.
The next frontier for me on Letterboxd is probably to get into choose one language and watch some movies from that language. Like
get really into like French noir.
Yeah. Do like Jean-Luc Godard or, I don't know, somebody from South Korea, like Bong Joon-ho.
I think for me, it's getting into movies from like the 50s or the 60s, like really diving into that, to that decade. And yep. Getting a sense of where we've come from in that regard in movies, which that's probably the most pretentious thing I think I've ever said on this podcast.
Those are hard movies to watch though.
I feel like some are. So this movie isn't quite as old as that, but I was going to ask you one of the things that I have not got to on my notes was, why only 4 stars for All the President's Men? Is it because of like the 70s of it all?
I don't know. 'Cause I really like Robert Redford. A lot of moms have told me I look like Robert Redford, which is a huge compliment.
That's quite the compliment. I am a huge fan of smoking in elevators, which that movie also brings. So
smoking indoors anywhere is always yes.
Yeah. One thing you and I are both huge fans of is cigarettes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So All the President's Men is probably like a Mount Rushmore cigarette movie.
In a former life, of course. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore.
Same. I do not. I don't dare dabble. But
no.
Dustin Hoffman is a heater smoking legend in that movie.
He is. I couldn't tell you why I didn't give that a 5-star rating. Because it probably should be. I try to reserve the 5 stars for stuff that I am like really obsessed with.
See, that's a movie and like that for me though. I love a good newspaper or journalism movie though, because I, for like 5 minutes after, I'm like, fuck, I could have been a reporter. And then I think about how much work that is and how talented you have to be. And I'm like, no, I probably couldn't have, but it'd be fun. Like also Spotlight. I love Spotlight.
Oh, Spotlight's phenomenal. But the newspaper industry is dying, Kyle.
Yeah. It depends. But yeah, it's we're shifting online. There's no more. You're not smoking cigarettes in the newsroom anymore. It's just a lot of virtual.
No, there's no cigs allowed. And also, you got to put everything behind a paywall, anyways. So whatever.
Yeah, it's we're all shifting online. But that, I mean, that's another reason I love revisiting movies like Spotlight and Zodiac. Zodiac's actually a good newspaper movie for the first half of it.
Zodiac is I mean, phenomenal. Are you kidding?
It's great. I'm a huge Zodiac fan.
Have you seen I just wanted to touch on one more movie
touch on it.
Another Round with Mads Mikkelsen.
Okay, so that has come out recently, right? Like that's hot right now.
Yeah, this is a 2020 movie. I'm not sure if it's gotten any nominations for Oscars this year, but if you take away one thing from this episode, anyone that's listening, that is the movie I would recommend to go and watch like tonight.
You're literally doing my job for me, because I was going to ask you, I was going to say, John, before we go, I need you to give the listeners something that's streaming right now to watch. And that is on Hulu. And I have stared at it a few times and like, should I dive in?
It is so like it's a mixture of comedy and just really just extreme depression. And Mads Mikkelsen is fantastic in it.
What is comedy if not extreme depression?
Exactly. You will have to read subtitles. It's a Danish film. excuse me for calling it a film, but that is my favorite movie of 2020.
That's a sign that we've been talking about Letterboxd too long. You called something film. John, this was fun. We talked for about an hour. I didn't really know how this was going to go, but at some point, let's log a few more movies on Letterboxd. I'll start writing reviews. Let's bring this
absolutely,
back.
Man.
Talk about some stuff we watched. Tell the folks again where they can follow you and what's coming up next for Internet
sure.
Party.
Sure. You can follow Internet Party at INTRNTPRTY on both Twitter and Instagram. If you follow one of those, you can find my ads as well. But yeah, we do a podcast once a week, and I also do a Substack every Saturday. That is pretty mundane, but if you want to read that, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Well, John, this was a real treat. I'm glad you returned to the show. Let's not wait 130 episodes to do this again.
No, let's absolutely get a sports movie on the books soon.
100%. We'll do something real soon. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe, rate, review. You folks know the drill. Also, for any baseball fans out there, check out my interview series From Phenom to the Farm that's presented by Baseball America. Comes at you every 2 weeks. This month have a former Pirates pitcher and former LSU punter, NFL draft hopeful Zach Von Rosenberg on the pod, Eric Sim, the king of JUCO on the pod. A lot of great stuff there. So for Big Screen Sports, we'll catch you next Monday. Thanks for listening. All right, dude, that was a lot of fun.